Hey, thank you so much for listening to the Big Time Talker Podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're live nationwide and worldwide thanks to our friends at SpeakerMatch.com, the world's largest online virtual speakers bureau. So if you're a meeting planner or you're a keynote speaker, get together at SpeakerMatch.com and find one another. January has been a tough month here in Washington, D.C., and all over the world after the events of January 6th and the insurrection at the United States Capitol, followed 2 weeks later by the inauguration of a brand new president. And much has been made of the media and its role in what happened. So I wanted to talk today to someone that pays really close attention to the media from a very analytical standpoint, and get some straight talk about how to interpret what we all see in the media. We're going to talk about fake news, junk media, the war on the media, what mainstream media means and why that's become sort of verboten, and lots more. So Vanessa Otero is the head of Ad Fontes Media. They're based in Colorado. And can you tell folks who are listening exactly what it is that you guys do and your media bias chart, Vanessa?
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to be on. Thanks for having me, Burke.
Thank you.
Our company, Ad Fontes Media, what we do is we rate the news. We rate it for reliability and bias. And listeners of your show might have seen the media bias chart circulating in some form or another over the last 4 years or so on the internet. It's just a infographic, two-dimensional, that shows where news media sources fall in terms of overall reliability and left-to-right political bias. And our name, Ad Fontes, is Latin for to the source, because what we do is we actually look at the source to make these determinations. We do a pretty rigorous content analysis. So we're not doing, you know, opinion polls or just any kind of snap judgment or measurements of these sources. What we're doing is going article by article and looking at, you know, the text and the graphics and the headlines, and, you know, making sure stuff is, you know, fact checking things, making sure they're true, figuring out the veracity of stuff in order to make these judgments. And we do it with a team of nonpartisan analyst panels. So we have, for every article that we rate, we have somebody from the left, somebody from the right, somebody from the center, looking at it in real time together and discussing their conclusions. And that's how we come up with our overall ratings. So we have thousands of news articles that we've rated that way, and hundreds of news sources on our chart, and we provide products and services related to that data.
Vanessa Otero, our guest today, and the media bias chart is how I first became aware of you. And as you mentioned, probably an awful lot of people have seen this online. For people who haven't, we're going to dive deep into it. But where did the idea come from, or where did you come up with the idea, or whoever there in the company come up with the idea that this is something that needs to happen?
Yeah, you know, I actually created this as a hobby about 4 years ago, right before, in the run-up to the last presidential election in 2016. And I am a patent attorney by profession, and I was a full-time patent attorney until a little while ago when I left to run my company full-time. But, you know, I say I created it as a hobby because, you know, I'm a news nerd. That's what I call myself and other folks that, you know, also like this kind of stuff. I noticed, hey, you know, there are certain sources that are better and certain sources that are worse, some that are left and right, but then there's some that are really more so left and right, some problematically so. And it would be helpful to like have a visual representation of this. It would help me in discussions with my friends online, because those can kind of be counterproductive really easily, you know, state of online discourse. So I, you know, spent a few weeks putting it together, coming up with these different categories, and, you know, put it on the internet, and it just went viral everywhere. I had no idea it would, you know, do such a thing, but it turned out people needed something like this. There was nothing out there that just kind of laid out a map of the media landscape based on actual criteria, things that were defined. And, as that spread, we got lots of feedback from folks all over the internet. As you can imagine, lots of people have opinions on it. So I heard from lots of folks, and you know, I really took that into heart. People would ask for the data and the methodology, and to rate more sources. And you know, the main complaint I would get was that since it was just me making this chart, that it was biased because I'm biased. And I thought, well, that's true. I am biased because I'm a human and all of us are. So sure. how to mitigate that? And the best way was to bring on other folks. So now we have a team of over 40 analysts that are, like I said, doing this all together, left, right, center. And it's really encouraging to see how folks from different political viewpoints can actually agree on stuff when you get down to the nitty gritty details.
I think that has been what I've run into an awful lot in doing what I do, is that people just don't get down into the weeds, into the nitty gritty mm-hmm. details on what's biased and what's not. And you know, when I have shared this document, even within my own company and within my friend circle, you're right. Wow. It generates an awful lot of argument where people will look at that and say, no, how does this media outlet wind up, so much down the middle or so far to the left or so far to the right? But it's really not like these arbitrary lists you'll see in People magazine of the most, happening bands of the 1990s. This,
right.
this data actually gets parsed by a bunch of folks. So pull back the curtain a little bit and mm-hmm. tell us, how you do what you do, how you decide where you're going to classify one of these media outlets, and also kind of break it down. I guess since this is an audio podcast, it's tough mm-hmm. for folks to figure it out visually. We may want to point them to AdFontesMedia.com mm-hmm. and they can take a look. But mm-hmm. it's media outlets on the left, media outlets in the center, and on the right. And then you also have a couple of other criteria that are based on reliability. So break it down for us on what it looks like and how you make those determinations.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you've seen a static image on the internet, you might not have seen the most recent versions. These do change over time. You're reflecting shifts in the media landscape. So if you go to our website, we have an interactive media bias chart that really allows you to dig in and see the data. You're visualized in a bunch of different ways, and you can get into more detail, and it has our most updated versions and data on there. So just imagine a two-dimensional chart, and the vertical axis, the y-axis is reliability. So it's reliability and news value. So it's generally, people think of good at the top and okay in the middle and bad at the bottom, but there's a lot of levels to what makes a news source good, what makes it just okay, what makes it problematic, what makes it bad, right? It's not as simple as a binary of real news and fake news, and or just news versus opinion even. There's just a lot of gradients. So from top to bottom, we put right at the very top is original journalism fact reporting, and then also fact re-reporting, just the confirmation of other news sources, but stuff that delivers the facts of what happened. That's at the very apex of our news landscape because people need this information, and the work that journalists do to go get that information and deliver to all of us is super important. And the rest of the news landscape, even the other good things like analysis and opinion of it, wouldn't even exist without that work that journalists do. So we put that at the top. And so right below that is the what are referred to as analysis. So when you take these facts and put them in context and explain why, often that's very helpful, but the more analysis and the more it gets into opinion, the less it gets away from actually just reporting the facts. So, it's facts at the top, and then below that is some good analysis. Below that is, a little bit weaker analysis. And then below that is this whole segment of opinion. And we just have a ton of analysis and opinion content in our whole news landscape. So that whole middle swath, there's nothing necessarily wrong with opinion and heavy analysis, but it's not exactly news. And, all of our cable news channels are sort of guilty of falling into this swath because it's kind of cheap and easy to produce analysis and opinion. It can get pretty partisan and biased, draw polarized audiences and make people mad. So, there's a lot of financial incentives to have a lot of opinion content out there. So we just want to say that it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's not as good as news. Now, below that, below the opinion, is where you start to get into problematic areas. Like, and it's not necessarily that something's fake or you're totally fabricated, right? There is, certainly is that stuff out there, but there are other problematic things, like things that are selective or unfair or so opinionated that they could be considered propaganda. So, you know, there's the whole swath of that kind of stuff out there too. And there is, there really is a lot of that, and it permeates social media really thoroughly. Below that is stuff that's misleading. And then at the very bottom is the stuff that's what we consider fake, false, inaccurate, fabricated. So, you know, from top to bottom, we measure the whole media landscape. And left to right, I think, makes a little bit more sense. But just in general, the left to right landscape is, you know, the most extremes on the outside, you know, the furthest ends of the chart. And the left-right spectrum, left-right axis of this chart is meant to capture the contemporary United States political spectrum as defined by the current, our current elected officials. So it's contemporary because these things with left and right shifts over time. It's United States because what's left and right shifts according to geography. It's different in different countries. And elected officials are like an easy way to measure like what's currently being represented by our government on the left and on the right to various degrees at the current time.
You know, you, you identified yourself in a sort of a self-deprecating way as a news nerd, but this stuff now really affects everybody. So it's not just the you and me, the news nerds of the world. This has, you know, greatly influenced the world up to and including having a whole bunch of insurrectionists break into the United States Capitol on January 6th mm-hmm. because of the content that's spread out there, not only in traditional news, but also in social media, which is sort of not in the purview of what you do. You know, I've got a few years on you, Vanessa, and back in the day, supermarket tabloids were a thing, and we mm-hmm. all kind of knew they were a thing that mm-hmm. was that was the original fake news. You know, you'd have the Weekly right. World News, and you would have pictures of Bat Boy on the cover, and Bat Boy is running for Senate, right. or whatever. And so that was the original thing. Now, though, some of these outlets that are the 2021 equivalent of the Weekly World News mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. are being accepted and bought into by some really smart people. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if, and this may be a little bit, you know, outside what you do, but I wonder if you have thoughts on how in the world that can happen on the left or on the right.
No, I have a ton of thoughts on why that can happen. I want to acknowledge that I didn't get into, you know, the nitty gritty of like how our analysts do it and how we select all the articles and stuff like that. Right. I'm happy to revisit that at any point because there's just so much to what we do. But, you know, the interactive chart, you can actually see the different articles that we rate and how and that actually relates to this question. So, you know, our modern media landscape is just so much more vast than our what previously existed. So if you had, you know, three major television networks and your local papers and your national papers and then your supermarket tabloids, and that's really it.
Right.
You know, it's sort of easy and simple to figure, okay, Bat Boy, that's fake, right? And that's just for entertainment. but it's more sophisticated now, right? There's thousands and thousands of news sources, and they're not all the same. It's not like you know, there are sources at the top of the chart that, you know, all their articles are, they kind of cluster around each other. And then there some fake news sites that like all their articles are, you know, really obviously like fake and misleading in the Bat Boy vein. But most of them are not like that. They're not that obvious. A lot of them have quite a bit of spread of stuff that's like, you know, acceptable news. And stuff that's kind of questionable, and there's some that's really misleading. And this, that mix, it really draws people in. So InfoWars is kind of famously, you know, unreliable. So so much so that it's gotten banned from major social platforms and stuff. And so it's, you know, this good example of like, oh yeah, that's fake news. But I still have people that will defend InfoWars to me or other sources like on the bottom left of the chart saying, well, you know, I know that guy gets a little carried away sometimes, but most of the time he's got good information, as if like, you know, only 33% of the stuff that's on there is fake news and like the other 67% is not. and that they should get credit for the 67%. Well, they shouldn't, right? A good journalism outlet should be correct about as often as a airplane is in the air.
Right.
Like, it should be all the time, right? So 5%, 2% fake news is like a very unreliable news source, right? But people don't, if you visit a source and, you know, most of the time it's fine, then you can get really sucked into reading something that's misleading and just accepting it. The other thing, just like higher level, you know, the phenomenon of like, how can people believe stuff that you look at and it's like clearly so wrong to you? Like, it's so illogical, unlikely, not plausible. But people will say, you know what, I'm not sure if this is true, but I'm going to kind of act as if it is true anyways. Like, with really complicated conspiracy theories that, again, sound insane to most people, can really throw people for a loop. And it's not just a matter of education. It's not just that people are dumb. Like you said, some really smart people will be like, I'm not sure if this is true, and I might believe it. So if you think about, like, we often take for granted the ways in which we come to the conclusion that something's likely true or something's likely not. Like, it's a really snap judgment that's really quick. And we're trying to very quickly measure a bunch of heuristics, like a bunch of shortcuts, right? So, and we're measuring shortcuts of things that are that we can easily make mistakes on. Those three things are reputation, incentives, and likelihood. Okay, so you're trying to judge the reputation of the speaker of the information, you're trying to judge the incentives of the speaker of the information, and you're trying to judge the likelihood of the thing that person is saying is true. And so for each one of those things, reputation, incentive, and likelihood, you can easily get that wrong if you just don't, if you're not looking for the right things. Like reputation, you know, do I know that this is a reputable news source? Like, what makes something reputable? Like, why should I trust a new publication, even if I've never heard of it? Say ProPublica, it's a very good publication, but it's new and not everybody's heard of it, right? Or or like a tweet, right? Just a tweet from somebody that you don't know. Like, why do you have a better trust of reputation for ProPublica versus the tweet? And some people, they'll miss that, right? They'll miss that they shouldn't just trust the tweet. The second thing is incentives, right? And you can get somebody's incentive wrong. One example is, you know, some radio show hosts would, in the past few weeks, talking about election misinformation, would give credit to, like, Lynn Wood and Sidney Powell, you know, the Trump lawyers who were spreading misinformation. Let me correct myself. Sidney Powell is, you know, not officially a Trump lawyer. But they were spreading misinformation about the election. And so people would defend them by saying, well, they're lawyers. They don't, if they lied, they could get disbarred. And therefore, they have an incentive to tell the truth, right? That's a mismeasurement of what the actual incentives were, right? That incentive was not preventing them from telling lies.
Got
okay.
It. Yep.
And then likelihood, right? The likelihood that something did or did not happen. You know, there are principles like Occam's razor principle, where you know, usually the simplest explanation is the true one. But sometimes people just miss that kind of signal of likelihood, and they'll look to a different signal. A different kind of signal can be level of detail, right? So say you look at a AP news report, which has a lot of detail in it, and then you look at a know-nothing, you know, source that you've never heard of, like a long blog or tweet just on the internet, and it also has a lot of detail, but it's about something completely false. So the AP story says, these are all the things that happened in Georgia and in Michigan and in Arizona. And this tweet or blog, it says, well, this is what happened in Georgia. Actually, all these, you know, here's an elaborate story about how software was sent by satellites to some building in Italy, and like the Italian government was involved in rigging the election. And that's how all this happened, right? That second story is very, very unlikely. But if you're not looking for that likelihood indicator, you're just looking at, well, this one has details, this one has details. I have no idea which one to believe. They both sound plausible to me. You just throw up your hands in the air. It's really, really easy to miss truth if you're not going through that process.
Vanessa Otero is our guest today, and we're talking about her media bias chart, which you can find all over the internet. How do you keep, let's be a little granular here, how do you keep the bias out of your media bias chart? Because as you said, we all have internal biases. You said, you know, you've got folks that are on the left and on the right and in the middle that evaluate these articles. But let's say, for example, and I'm looking at the media bias chart right now, an article comes in or an outlet like the New York Times, which is going to have opinion pieces on the editorial page, and they're going to have, quote unquote, straight news coverage. Well, certainly every conservative in America is going to say the New York Times is, you know, a left wing publication. So how do you and your team determine where to place the New York Times on your chart? Because what's in that newspaper is going to vary within the paper itself.
Yep. So that's why we really rely on samples of articles. It's an article by article analysis. The more granular you can get, as you said, the more you can agree. If you, the more abstract, the easier it is to disagree. So if you're saying, like, talking about CNN, people will just throw around things like, oh, well, CNN is great, or CNN is garbage, or CNN is left, or CNN is too moderate, or whatever, right?
Yep.
But CNN is like a TV network, has like international partners. It like has the online publication, has an app, like, and it has dozens of shows and hosts and journalists, right? So, if you talk about like, you know, CNN said this thing on this day, you know, which was like right or wrong, then like people left, right, and center can agree on that granular fact, right? Or you, to go back to the New York Times, we have a left, right, we look at them article by article. So we will select our samples to include all the news analysis and opinion pieces of any given article. Like we measure it all, and we don't necessarily say, you know, just because this is an opinion, this is separate from the newspaper. Like people read it all together. You know, the fact that, you know, Wall Street Journal publishes right-leaning opinion pieces makes people think that Wall Street Journal is right, and that's valid. And the fact that New York Times and Washington Post publish more left-leaning opinion pieces than right-leaning ones makes them think they are more left than right, and that's valid as well. So to capture that, we do measure, we do rate all those articles. So we take say you have a left-leaning opinion piece in the New York Times. Well, that is going to get rated right in the left-leaning opinion section. There's a section that's called, you know, skews left, and there's a section called hyperpartisan left. Our three analysts, left, right, and center, can all look at that article and say, all right, this one is hyperpartisan left, and it is opinion. It goes in, right in the opinion section. And they will agree with a high degree of fidelity. But then they'll also, like, the next article they read might just be, like, a straight report about something that happened internationally, you know, straight fact reporting. And they will all rate that for, like, in the middle for having minimal bias. And they'll all rate it in the fact reporting section, which is a different section than that previous article. So our sample is, like, a weighted average of all of our overall source score is a weighted average of all those different articles that we've rated. And so for the big publications, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, we've rated well over 100 articles, but each of the, you know, hundreds of sources on our chart have at least 15 articles rated over a period of time. And that reflects, you know, their most prominent coverage for a particular day. So if a publication chooses to have like a very prominent opinion analysis pieces, and that's what they show at the top of their page, that's what that's going to reflect their score.
Do you think, Vanessa, that a big part of the issue is that there is this blending, certainly in cable news, of you know, sort of straight news blocks, if you will, and and these opinion shows that, frankly, are the most highly rated by far on all the cable news networks, and that the average guy who lives in his town and, you know, is just trying to feed his family and get through the day really doesn't delineate between a newscaster and a Chris Hayes on MSNBC or mm-hmm. Sean Hannity on Fox News. Do you think that there should be, you know, big flashing signs that say this is opinion, this is not news? Would that help our situation at all?
I think labeling it would help, because I think people don't notice that. And folks that are more media savvy kind of take for granted that people do distinguish that, and people don't. I mean, it's called cable news network. That's what CNN stands for, right? So you kind of expect that, like, well, news is in the name. Yeah. And then what is Fox called? It's called Fox News, right? So you kind of expect that it's news as well. But the quality of each, the mix of news analysis and opinion on each of those is, it's very, very, very heavily analysis and opinion. So you could watch 4 to 6 hours of each of those cable networks each day in a day, and hear about maybe four news stories, but then 25 opinions and pundits' takes on it. That's not news. And it's, I refer to it as like the donuts and fries of news. Like if junk food is like junk news, I love this analogy of junk food being junk news. Like your real news is like your APN, Reuters, wire services, and, you know, straight news reporting from reputable publications. That's, you know, your lean meats and vegetables and whole grain carbohydrates. But yeah, people will, and donuts and fries, they are food. Like cable news, I guess, is news, and it won't kill you, but it's bad for you.
Too much of it is not good. Not too many chicken nuggets. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, people say, take it for granted, like, well, Fox's news side is, you know, they're saying these things that are very reasonable, but their opinion side, okay, well, that's where their hosts get in trouble. People don't like all of a sudden say, oh, well, now I'm watching opinion. Like, you know, the hour has changed. I'm going to put my opinion hat on. No, it just kind of all blends together. There's a great article that's actually out today in the Columbia Journalism Review. And it quotes NYU professor Jay Rosen talking about, it's actually by the CNN public editor who said CNN needs to do away with the panels. It's all about panels all day, because it's, you know, I wholeheartedly agree with this. You've got, it's cheaper and easier to just have four people's talking heads, you beamed into the studio to give their takes, than to actually send reporters onto the ground to tell you like what's happening. But there's such an opportunity for these, networks with 24-hour news, broadcast capability. And yes, it's more expensive, but what kind of service they could really bring if they had, you know, journalists and reporters like on the ground telling us new news stories about different communities and different events that are happening all around the country and all around the world. I mean, that would be immensely valuable.
You know, I'm glad you're saying that, because sometimes when I sound wistful, and I've got a few years on you, and I talk about, you know, Walter Cronkite, and you got the straight news, and you knew what you were going to get from Uncle Walter, and you know, people look at me like I'm a Martian or I have three heads. Is there an opportunity to get back to that world? And let me preface it by saying that, you know, when CNN launched in 1980, it was around the same time MTV launched, and MTV used to play music videos, and of course they don't anymore, because that financial model was not sustainable. They had to go into other kinds of programming. It was the same thing with CNN. You know, the ratings were not as good as they were for Fox News for many years because of Fox's opinion pieces. So they moved to doing these shows with one or two folks. And you know, Fox, there was at least in the beginning sort of a pretense of that with Sean Hannity and Alan Colmes. Mm-hmm. We had the point counterpoint. You know, all of that's gone now. The pretense of being down the middle is gone. Is there, if you were to crystal ball it, is there a business reason, an opportunity for news outlets, whether they be newspapers, TV, radio stations, to get back to the middle, or is that in our rearview mirror?
No, I think there is, but it's going to take a concerted effort from all stakeholders in good news media, right? Like, we see the damage that this fractured and highly polarized media landscape has caused. It's not just like annoying that your relatives disagree with you. It's that like some of them are so far gone down like conspiracy theory rabbit holes that they're like, unreachable. That it's like they're in cults.
Right.
This becomes deadly. It was dangerous and it was deadly. I mean, we haven't even we see that now with the Capitol insurrection, right? People believing literal fake news about some, you know, QAnon like storm coming, whatever. That like, you know, they thought that this, like, they should storm the Capitol. It did not. It certainly, you know, having instigated by, you know, the leader of our country at that time, just added this whole other dimension to it. But this, it was like a perfect storm of, you know, leadership telling, you know, the big lie, having that circulate throughout this media ecosystem, and having people not being able to tell the difference, right? So it's dangerous and it's deadly. We haven't even reckoned with the fact that misinformation is largely responsible for the deaths of over 400,000 people from coronavirus this last year. I mean, the depth of disinformation that has caused the damage specifically related to coronavirus is just like mortifying to me. But now people get it. And people understand, like, we have to do something about this problem. And people say, like, you know, how can we do something about it? Because look, it seems like this is what consumers want because it's more profitable. And I go back to the junk food, junk news analogy. Like, in the 50s and 40s, 50s and 60s, when processed food and junk food and fast food became available, everyone's like, wow, this is great. Look, rapidly available food. And then a few years later, we saw like the massive detrimental health effects society wide of having, you know, food that was like too much fat, salt, sugar, right? And there was like a catch-22 by the producers of the food and consumers. The producers of the food were incentivized to make money and increase their businesses, and consumers themselves showed that they wanted that, right? How did we shift that? Because that's what we're going through right now. The publishers, even the good ones, the major, like, powerful networks, they have business models and incentives to chase and uphold, right? So if they're just saying, well, we're just giving the consumers what they want, and what they want is this highly opinionated stuff, how do we break the cycle? Well, I think in the same way that cycle has evolved and changed with food. If you think about it, you know, there did not used to be nutrition labels for food until the 70s, the FDA. And you know, there's this industry of news ratings that, you know, we are leaders in now. It's a new industry that you used to not have news ratings. And so now we figure out a way to like label news. And I think that's an important part of it, but it's not just the labeling of it. It's the financial incentives. It's consumers demanding that they have better choices and better options. It's the publishers themselves saying, you know, we want to take responsibility for mitigating our own bias and upholding our standards while in pursuit of our profits for our business models. It's the advertisers realizing the role that they play in funding polarizing junk news and funding or not funding good journalism. This is really where my company is doing a lot of work with existing partners. We work with an ad agency called Oxford Road. It's a leading digital audio ad agency. We're coming out with a new initiative in conjunction with some other key partners called the Media Roundtable that's designed to bring together publishers and advertisers and consumers to demand that the content, the news and opinion content that folks put out there meets basic standards and not, it doesn't, you know, dehumanize and vilify our opponents, like has some kind of basic level of respect in a dialogue and doesn't seek to just divide and divide and divide. But it takes everybody. It takes the consumers demanding it. It takes the publishers, you know, producing it. And it takes the advertisers saying, you know, we're not going to fund this junk news and we are going to fund good journalism. So our role is to help people distinguish between each of those kinds of news and opinion type of content.
Vanessa Otero is our guest today, and I could talk to you about this forever because it's it's especially after January 6th, as you said, it's no longer about the you know, the annoying drunk uncle at Thanksgiving that you got to argue with.
Right.
This is now a life or death thing, and the genie is certainly out of the bottle. If you look at Vanessa's company's media bias chart, and all you have to do is, I think, Google the media bias chart, and you'll see it come up in its various iterations. I think the latest one was version 6.1, maybe. It's a triangle. If you can visualize that, where at the top, the very top, in the middle of that triangle, the top peak is the news content that is straight down the middle. And then, just like a triangle, man, it diverges quickly, and you've got lots of stuff to the left, and you got lots of stuff to the right, and there's just not a whole hell of a lot in the middle anymore. And I wonder, as you talked about what happened on January 6th and the also the damage that was done from coronavirus, there will be people listening right now who say, oh, she's just another one of these mainstream media people who are just pushing that whole agenda, and you know, that's not right. And what about all the fake news that's in mainstream media is on the left? And I wonder what you would say to those people, because clearly, looking at your own media bias chart, it diverges to the left an awful lot, too.
Yeah, you know, so if you, I know at first glance it looks like an inverted V, like a triangle.
Yep.
But if you look closely, it's not an exactly equal distribution. So one thing I want to point out is that, you know, the middle of the chart doesn't mean the best, right? It's a vertical axis that the stuff at the top is good, and the stuff at the bottom is worse, right?
Yep.
So the middle stands for a couple of things. It can be in the middle because it's minimally balanced or minimally biased. Folks refer to it as neutral, or it's centrist. And centrist is an actual political position, like a compromise position between two positions. Or it's balanced, like saying here's one side and here's the other, right? That's not exactly the same thing. And middle doesn't mean the best. It doesn't mean it's necessarily good. We're just trying to capture what the middle is in the United States right now. If you think back to before the civil rights movement, you know, one side was, you know, pro-segregation and one side was against segregation.
Right.
You can't just say the middle position on that was the right one. No, like over time, like now we have wide consensus in this country. Segregation is wrong. I mean, think back further to slavery, right? So what the middle is, you know, the middle doesn't necessarily mean like most morally right or good, right? There's a constant shift in what we figure is morally right or good as a society. And, you know, the things that we measure are things that, like, if you look article by article, no matter your political persuasion, if you look at an article and say, like, this one is heavier in fact reporting, or this one has more opinion, like, there are certain objective markers you can use to measure that. Like, when we look at when we rate our articles based on at least six different sub-factors. Okay. So for reliability, it's expression. Is it expressed? Is it meant to be taken as a fact? Is it meant to be taken as analysis and meant to be taken as opinion, right? Then there's also veracity, like how true is it? And the truth of something is something that can be determined. You know, you can corroborate things. You can find primary sources. You find evidence and documentation that something is true or not. So we rate it for that as well. We also rate, you know, does the headline and the graphic reflect what's in the article? You know, that's a different measurement. So we take all three of those plus some other measurements. We come up with an overall rating. And then for left to right, those are things that are quantifiable too. Like, does this article advocate for a Republican position or a Democratic position, or does it advocate for no position at all? What is the language that's used in there? Does the language, do they use a political terminology that's more associated with the right or the left, like pro-life or pro-choice, or like estate tax or death tax? How do they characterize their opponents, and what kind of adjectives do they use to characterize, you know, President Biden, President Trump, right? Do they say, you know, no adjectives or neutral adjectives, or are you calling somebody, you know, senile or evil? I mean, those are terms that you can spot in the actual text of the article itself sure. that you can use to measure, you know? So these are all like as objective as possible measurements. Like, of course, you know, we're all biased as humans, but you can grade something on a rubric, even though there's some subjectivity to it. It's kind of like grading a figure skating or gymnastics or like an AP essay. Like, you have a rubric, people who are well trained can come to very similar conclusions, even though it's there's an element of human subjectiveness to it. That's how we do it. People are welcome to dive into our methodology, critique it how they want, but we've got receipts.
We can arm wrestle with them all day long here, as I have when I've shown this to people. Let's talk about a little bit of good news in your news mm-hmm. chart, your media bias chart. There is, at the very top of that pyramid, some sort of right down the middle, news outlets, the Associated Press, UPI, Reuters, these wire services. And mm-hmm. then right under that, this always struck me, and I think that might be a beacon of light in the world. There's a lot of local media outlets.
Mm-hmm. And
I think that's fantastic. You know, there's the Tennessean, for example, which is a great paper. Mm-hmm. Their online mm-hmm. outlet, Syracuse.com, Minneapolis paper, the Star Tribune, even the Las Vegas Review-Journal, where I used to work for CBS, coincidentally, at mm-hmm. one time. The challenge is, of course, newspapers, by and large, mm-hmm. are challenged financially now. The wire services have a different business model where different members pay, and many people don't know this, pay dues to be a part mm-hmm. of that, and that tends to make it right down the middle. Is the future of less biased news, if not unbiased news, in these local outlets where if you really kind of want to get the skinny on things, you pay attention to your local TV station, your local radio station, your local newspaper? Is that where we need to look?
Yeah, you know, I think there are a lot of viable business models in that a high reliability, minimally biased middle category. And I've seen a few, and certainly local news is one of the best. And yeah, as you know, local news has gone through some really difficult business model changes and challenges with the rise of digital. And, you know, our company like seeks to help ameliorate that. Like, local news is so needed in communities around the world and around the country and around the world. And there are good, I think there are ad supported models, subscriber models. It's always kind of been a hybrid for local news, having subscriber revenue plus advertising. But you know, they haven't been able to adapt to the kind of shifts that brought so much of the advertising online. And I think advertisers really have a huge role to play in fixing that, because news content, the IAB has reports out showing how news are like they have a working group called News Saves Lives, and how like advertising next to news is like just good society wide for so many different reasons. So if advertisers could actively funnel and focus and prioritize on advertising in news content, that would be greatly beneficial. There are other models for delivering unbiased news, like straight subscription models. Of course, not everybody pays for that, but there are also advertiser models like for newsletters. There are a bunch of really great newsletters, some on new ones on Substack, or some just like regular newsletters that are Substacks are subscription based. There are other ones that are advertiser based, but there are good ones. There's a good site, a website out there called The Neutral. It has a site in the Digest. There's one called 1440. The Skim. These are email newsletters and sites that have they have ad revenue, like they're ad supported because they have ads in the newsletters themselves. They're usually like well curated, but those business models do work. The hard part is that with digital advertising, especially programmatic advertising in the news, because of brand safety concerns, so many brands have said, you know, we don't want to advertise next to any news because some of it's fake and some of it's polarizing. So just forget it. Now, that doing that is just so damaging because you take all this revenue from these great local sources or from these great, you know, independent publications or smaller publications that are doing really great reporting, unbiased reporting. And they're just kind of, you know, with a blunt force tool saying, no news, you know, we're just not going to advertise on news. So that's one of the ways that we're stepping in to help advertisers differentiate between like the good stuff and the junk.
And there is good stuff out there. You just have to ferret it out. I'll give a quick high five to the local news radio station here in our market, WTOP in Washington, D.C., which has been one of the top five billing radio stations in America for many years now. And they're right mm-hmm. down the middle. And you know, I've talked to their programming people many times, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's a lot of traffic in this town, and they do traffic reports every 10 minutes, 24/7, and they do the weather every 10 minutes, 24/7, and then the news is unbiased. So it is out there, and you can find it. This is a fascinating conversation. I know that it's a changing dynamic out there, and I would like to put a request in right now that when and if things change in a big way again, that we can get you back on the podcast to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Vanessa, how can folks find you and the Media Bias Chart online? Point them towards what you do and how they can find out more and perhaps help.
Yeah, our company is AdFontes Media, and if you just go to adfontesmedia.com or if you just go to mediabiaschart.com, that'll take you to our site as well. You can see all the different ways that you can do your part to play your role in fixing our news ecosystem. Like I said, it will take the work of all of us. There's not just one silver bullet to fix these problems in news media, but our mission is to make news consumers smarter and make news media better. And I know that's a really tall order, sounds like a lofty goal, but it's so important and we so need it. So the stakeholders in good media are you. You know, if you're just a news consumer, being able to tell the difference between the good stuff and the junk and not share misinformation. You know, we have resources for you. For educators, you know, teaching news literacy more effectively in classes throughout high school and college. You know, we need you and we have resources and products for you. Like I talked about this the whole time, publishers, marketers, social media companies, governments, everyone has a role to play. And we provide resources and products and services, and data to help support everyone's goals in working towards that, you know, more perfect union.
It's so, so important, and I know there will be folks listening who go, gosh, it sounds like a nanny state to me, and here we go with more of this cancel culture and telling people how to think. It's not that at all. It's about educating yourself to know what you're consuming, and as cliche as it sounds, Vanessa, I really do believe it. It's more important now than ever, and we've seen that after January 6th. Thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks, Bert.
Vanessa Otero. And the Media Bias Chart. Hey, thank you for listening. And thanks to our sponsor, SpeakerMatch.com, the world's largest online virtual speakers bureau. Wherever you go, whatever you do today, be good to one another. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe. Bye, everybody.